The CDC estimates that more than 5 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's. Greg O'Brien is one of them. He's a journalist and co-host of a podcast about living with the disease. It's called The Forgetting, and it comes from NPR member station WCAI in Cape Cod. Side Effects Public Media's Isaiah Seibert talked with O'Brien about the stigma of dementia.
Greg O'Brien, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
And so you've been very open to sharing your experience with Alzheimer's. You have a memoir, podcast, and a series on NPR. Why is it so important for you to share your story?
Well, Isaiah, it's personal for me. I lost my maternal grandfather, my mother, my paternal uncle to Alzheimer's. And before my father died, he was diagnosed with dementia. Years ago, I started the symptoms and was diagnosed after a series of brain scans and SPECT scans and clinical tests and two serious head traumas that doctors said I shouldn't have survived, that they said exacerbated the diagnosis. And I also carry the Alzheimer's gene APOE4, and there's 50% chance that my children could have the disease and my grandchildren. My journey is not about me. No one really should care about me. I'm a journalist, okay? So just like you, you know? We're telling the story, reporting the story. It's trying to get people to focus on the disease, the inaccuracy of the stereotype of the disease, and building a critical mass to try to get people out and realize that we really have to stop this. And also at the same time, this disease can take 20 to 25 years to run its serpentine course. And experts will tell you that the pathology without symptoms can start when you're in your 40s. So this isn't your grandfather's disease. And my journey has been trying to get people to talk in faith, hope, and humor about Alzheimer's while the doctors and the researchers race for a cure. We wouldn't talk about cancer. We wouldn't talk about AIDS. We need to bring Alzheimer's out of the closet. And when you look at the people who haven't been diagnosed, who have the disease, who know they have disease and are afraid to talk about it.
And what do you hope people will take away when they listen to you?
I hope they look in the mirror. I don't want their pity. I don't want them to look at me. I hope they come to understand the disease. I hope they learn more about the disease. I hope they look to their families. I hope they look to relatives of the past. And I hope they learn more about it and be more open to it. Alzheimer's, as I said before, is not the end stage. It's not you're 80 years old and you're in a nursing home. It starts when you're in your 50s or your 60s. And most of the people in this stage are afraid to talk about it. They're afraid of losing their jobs. I know a lot of people who weren't able to do their jobs. It attacks sometimes the left brain more than the right brain. And so as a writer with right brain, it's been easier for me because I have strategies of a reporter, but it's horrible. And we need to just build a critical mass.
What responses do you get from people when they hear you?
It's interesting. There was a time that, I'll give you an anecdote. I gave a speech to the Alzheimer's Association in Maine a while back, about 500 people there. And what happens in this disease, I've always told people, your brain is like an iPhone in the early stages, and I'm in the early to mid stage. It's still a sophisticated device, but it has a short-term battery, it pocket dials, and it gets lost very easily, and it drifts out. And before I gave my speech, I was with my son, because I don't travel alone anymore. I can't drive. I can't drive a boat, anything like that. And I had a blackout. And the woman who was in charge of the speech came up to me, and she said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No, but I'm going to give the best speech of my life, because I don't speak off the cuff. I write out everything I'm going to say." And when I got out to the audience, I said, "Look, here's what happens. Here's what just happened a few minutes ago. This is Alzheimer's in real time. I'm going to miss some spots. I'm going to forget where I am. Work with me." I missed spot, and they stayed with me. When I was done, they gave a standing ovation. I said, "Well, that's nice. Thank you very much." I didn't want it to be out of pity. And I was exhausted because the battery was dead. And I went into the lobby of this hotel in Maine just to decompress. And I looked up, Isaiah, and there were 100 people standing in line. They didn't want to talk to me about me because I didn't want to talk about me. They wanted to talk about them and their families. And I said, okay, they're getting it. And that's the reason for this journey.
You were diagnosed 10 years ago, is that correct?
About nine years ago. And if it's a 20-year disease, I could have another 10 years. I was diagnosed probably 10 years earlier before someone would have had a diagnosis because I was the family caregiver for my mother and father who stumbled on this disease. And I had two serious head traumas. And I felt the symptoms coming on. And as an investigative print reporter, I couldn't multitask. I couldn't do my job. I needed help. So I reached out to one of my best friends who's my personal physician, and he connected me with the experts in the Boston area who did the tests and the diagnosis. And early diagnosis is so important. Don't be afraid. Maybe that's one of the important things to say here. Anyone who is having a problem, please don't be afraid to have a clinical test. There's a difference between not knowing where your car is parked and not knowing you have a car, forgetting where your car keys are and not knowing where you have a car. And if you get to that stage, there was a time a couple years ago I took my, when I could drive, I don't drive anymore, so no one should be nervous, my yellow Jeep to the dump in Brewster, and we're unsophisticated on Cape Cod, so we actually take our garbage to the... It's kind of cool because I think they should have sports pubs there, and they do a lot of politicking there, and it's kind of a good... But anyway, I'm off track. You got to keep me on track. So I dropped my trash, and then I said, okay, how do I get home? I could call my wife. I could call my kids. A friend will drive me. My mind in the moment would not tell me that my four-door yellow Jeep that was sitting right in front of me was my car. And that's Alzheimer's in real time. So anyone who's experienced something like that, don't be afraid. That's the most important thing we're talking about today. Reach out. Reach out to professional people who know how to do this. You need to go to the best possible professional people who do these clinical tests. And if it comes out that you need help, it's okay, because you're going to be better off that way than the other way. It's a long journey. There are medications, there are strategies and pills. As the great Bugs Bunny once said, don't take life too seriously because nobody gets out alive. So just help yourself.
You mentioned that there's a lot of misunderstanding surrounding Alzheimer's. Do you think that prevents people from seeking care?
Yeah, it's a taboo. It's the brain. I mean, Isaiah, it's called dementia. That's the umbrella word for cognitive impairment, of which Alzheimer's is the chief disease. Listen to the word. It sounds like a demon howling in the desert. And so nobody wants to go there. I don't know if you know this, I have cancer too, and I'm not treating it. And it's my exit strategy because I've been to the nursing home with my mom and dad, and I'm not going to take my family there. I deal with intense depression, and we face bankruptcy. And it's not a sob story. It's just, I'm just an envelope for other people. But it's just understanding that there's help out there. And the greatest thing in Alzheimer's is the isolation. My mother used to talk about that. And I was there at her deathbed. I held her hand before she died. And I said, you know, we're going to start to talk about this.
So many people have secondary familiarity with Alzheimer's. They may know of a family member or friend who's living with the disease, but how do you describe it to people who have never experienced it?
Here's one way of describing it. When I would give a speech, I will ask people, how many people have ever lived in a home with a basement? Please raise your hand. People who are listening can think about that. How many people have ever done their laundry down in the basement? Please raise your hand. How many people have ever done their laundry down the basement when someone up in the kitchen didn't realize they were down there and shut the light off? It's penetrating darkness. And that's what early onset Alzheimer's is like. The light is on, the light is off. The light is on, the light is off. But you know one day someone is not going to be up in the kitchen to turn the light back on. The stereotype of it is you're 85 years old and you're drooling and you're incontinent. And by the way, I'm incontinent today, and there are times that I do drool. But it's you're in the nursing home and you can't speak. That's the final stage. This is a 20 to 25 year journey generally. There are cases where it moves quicker, but I will tell you this, that so many people from time to time say to me, well, my mother was diagnosed and she died 7 years later. To which I say, well, I mean, that's really so sad. But then I will say, in all likelihood, and I said there are always exceptions to every rule, is that your mother carried this disease for 20 or 25 years and was afraid to talk about it. And if we could get society to start to talk about this and empower people so they feel that you're not dead with this disease, you're just living with a demon that you have to fight every day, and you could still do good things. And I think that's a legacy, and I want that for my children. As I said, my journey is not for me. The train has left. I ain't coming back. But it's for my children, your grandchildren, and the children and grandchildren of people who are listening.
So you just talked about empowerment. In the podcast, you repeat three words a lot of the time: faith, hope, and humor. What do those things mean to you? Is it a source of empowerment for you?
Yeah. Well, the humor is pretty simple. I'm Irish Catholic, the most imperfect sinner in the world, by the way, and I've committed every sin a man can commit, but murder and adultery, but I have a strong faith in God. But I'm not proselytizing. Everyone finds their own level of faith, but it's a matter of faith and a higher power, I believe. And the hope is the hope for a cure. And the humor is what gets you through it, to be able to laugh. And in Alzheimer's, you become, in some ways, you lose your filter. There's some part of your brain that doesn't connect. And I joke about it that we become more Larry David-like, which childish-like. And I'm kind of enjoying it, where you say things that everyone else wants to say, but they're afraid to say. And all of a sudden, you say something, they go, oh my God, I can't believe you said that.
You're no stranger to the disease yourself. You mentioned that some of your family members have had it. You've had it for going on 9 years now. But has there been anything in your journey of living with it that surprised you, that you weren't expecting at all?
People think of Alzheimer's as loss of memory. It's generally loss of short-term memory. But that's not what the disease is. The disease is a total breakdown of the body. The mind is the control panel for the body. So right now, today, and I could sit here because I'm prepped to do this, but after this interview, like I said, my brain's like an iPhone. My battery will be dead. It runs for a short period. But what people don't understand is that in Alzheimer's, it attacks at all different levels. It attacks in rage. 60% of my short-term memory can be gone in 30 seconds. If I go into a room anywhere where I see people that I don't expect to see, 70% of the time I won't know who they are. Now, I live in a place like Cape Cod. I hate cliches like it takes a village, but people there know me and they go, hey, and they kind of reintroduce themselves to me. You deal with, you know, intense depression. You deal with scary hallucinations. There's a numbness. I have no feeling now from my feet to my knees. It's neuropathy, but it's also brain signals not going down because the body shuts down because the brain is a control panel for the body. And it's like a death of a thousand cuts, and the depression is horrible, and it drives you into bankruptcy. But before people slit their throats, I want to say there's faith, hope, and humor in this. And I've always said, and I said in my book on Pluto, Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's, that lying down in wrestling, as in football, is a position of defeat. Don't lie down. If you can't get up, have someone help you get up. Reach out. Don't be afraid to talk about it. That's the most important thing. You do feel alone. I feel intense loneliness. That's why I call it Pluto. I think Pluto is the perfect metaphor for Alzheimer's. Look at the NASA pictures. Intense isolation, if you could just, in people's mind. That's what Alzheimer's feels like. But realize that there is a light out there, and reach for it. And that light is faith, hope, and humor in the company of others. And you can't fight this disease alone.
We got to the end of my questions. Is there anything else you want to add that we didn't touch on?
No, I just hope people reach out and talk, and that's the most important thing. We need to talk about this, and God bless anyone who's listening.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Greg O'Brien, for chatting.
Thank you. Take care.